The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of Spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Welcome to Channel F, Fanbytes, video games, podcast, and you're joining us in the middle of the Great Meal Debate 2021. We are planning our trip to Providence, Rhode Island.
Our
company trip, where we're going to go make content and hang out in Providence, Rhode Island. And a bitter rift has emerged. I can't believe I used the word rift after I was complaining about it so
much. I can't
believe
you did either. That was the first thing I thought of.
Jesus.
Merit pro rift.
Pro rift. I'm I can't get my story straight, but we've been just animosity has broken out among the Fanbyte staff as we argue whether we should go out to brunch or dinner. Now, there are good people on both sides. I think we should try and remember
there's
that.
Some surprising choices, too.
Good people on both sides. But with me, as always, is a crew that is going to put in their two cents on the brunch versus dinner question. First, we have Fanbyte social editor, brand editor, brand manager.
It's one of those.
Titles are fluid. They're sort of,
much like a mimosa at brunch.
So you're pro brunch, Nikki Grayson.
I'm pro brunch. Here's why.
Tell me why.
You can have dinner whenever, you know?
Well, like no, brunches, because then it wouldn't be dinner.
Yeah.
But then it wouldn't be brunch then, would it? Brunch is beautiful because we had to craft a time. We cut out a specific time for a very specific bucket of food. And we said, this food is beautiful enough that it deserves its own meal.
Okay.
You're not going to make, this is what I told Jordan earlier. You're not going to make an Eggs Benedict at 8 a.m. That's perverted.
No, of course not.
That's sicko shit. You're also not going to have an Eggs Benedict at 8 p.m. because that is equally sick and perverted.
I mean, that is actually illegal.
Yeah, so the perfect time for it is between the hours of 10 and 1 p.m.
Okay.
And I think that there's something beautiful about food that can only reasonably be consumed in a four-hour chunk. And if you miss it, you're assed out. You just have to try again either the next day or in 6 days when it comes back around again,
So you think, so brunch is a weekend-only thing for you?
Yes. Okay. I don't believe in a weekday brunch.
A weekday brunch. That would be too decadent.
It's not that it's too decadent. It's like a maybe it
just
is
can't,
decadent.
It just can't exist.
It implies that I don't have things to do.
I see.
You know?
Yes.
Like the beauty of brunch is that I don't have to go to work after.
Right.
Like I'm not going to get bottomless on a Wednesday.
Sure. Yeah. You do have to keep your pants on a Wednesday. That is so true.
Yeah, exactly.
Porky picking on a Wednesday is just out of the question. Danielle Riando, managing. Yeah. No, that's not you. You're the editor
not
in
me.
Chief.
I was once a managing editor. I used to be.
I had too many mimosas at the meal that I was at.
Bottomless. Yeah.
What's your take on this? Where do you stand on the brunch dinner divide?
Oh god. Well, dinner first and foremost.
Right.
But it's really kind of an arbitrary choice because I am by far, I don't think there's any controversy here. I have the weirdest fucking diet out of anybody that I know.
Yeah, so you're just going to eat some loose kernels of corn regardless.
It's just easier to get a salad that has things I eat in it at dinner. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the main thing.
Brunch or dinner, you're just eating a carrot dipped in yogurt anyway, so, like, what's the difference?
Pretty much, kind of, like, to be honest. And the thing is, like, I'm going to Italy, like, 2 weeks after this. And that is, like, truly giving me anxiety right now. I'm probably going to buy some, like,
camping meals and some things. They say.
Like, it's giving me agita. It really is a little bit. But, yeah, anyway, dinner, it is easier to find weird fucking low-carb vegetarian foods.
Mm. Danielle, did you just say that you're going to go to the fucking REI before you get on the flight to Italy?
Yes.
Italy.
Yep.
The birthplace. We didn't have food before Italy was born.
I know.
And you're just going to, like, eat, like, camping
food. Not the whole time. Listen, there's going to be several cheat days, but I cannot, I cannot have, like, 15 cheat days in a row.
No, for sure. I just don't want you to be out there and be like, well, this sucks.
No.
I already allocated all of my food budget on rehydrated beans.
I just need to have some of those. So, like, a few days, I'm, like, doing all right by my normal diet. That's all.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Stephen Strom, managing editor, what's your take?
I am particular towards brunch as a general concept, but then you sort of threw, like, a stake in the heart of this vampire weekend that we're kind of planning here, Merritt, by mentioning that, like, we have so many people at this thing, and I do think that brunch is good. I think brunch is, like, maybe the best possible meal, and I think there is something to the limited edition nature of it, but it is there is a more of a limit, a population cap, if you will, on a brunch. I think, like, 5 to 6 people, maybe 7 people is enough for brunch. We have more than 7 people going to Rhode Island.
Yeah.
I would, some would argue 3 times as many as 7 people.
Yeah.
But do you think that this still applies if you have reservations?
Yeah. No, it's still,
you do.
There's something about brunch that maybe it's because I live in New York and people are insane here about brunch.
Right.
They're crazy about it.
Just like in Friends.
Just like in Friends. They love that. They love brunch so much.
Love brunch.
Heading down to Central Perk.
Getting brunch at Central Perk. And it's just like a war zone. It's, like, so stressful.
Right.
Like and then I never want to be that person at a restaurant who's like, yeah, can we get, like, 3 tables and blah, blah, blah. And then it's a whole fucking thing. Brunch to me, best brunch is, in, like, a small group or with just one other person.
Yeah, and, two people brunch.
The classic move for me, if you're, you know, in a relationship with the person or if you're just close enough where you are fine with doing this, one of you orders, like, an omelet or a scramble or something, and the other one orders just the most just decadent French toast you can find on the menu.
Yeah.
And then you split both of them.
Yes.
Fantastic. It's great stuff.
That's my pro strat for brunch. That's, like, my pro move. I used to go to this place called Glow's in Seattle all the time. They had really great scrambles. They had a stuffed French toast with, like, a jam inside. Oh my God. So good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is, in fact, the move.
That is, that's the move.
There's an inherent rowdiness to the number of people that we're bringing there that I think runs antithetical to that sort of emotional state.
Yeah, and also I think Jordan brought up a good point, which is that if this is being paid for, how much money can you realistically spend at brunch? I mean, if you're getting drinks, sure. But, like, there's no brunch meal that's going to be, like, obscene. If you're going to dinner.
Right.
Yeah, get a filet.
You're also not going to run in there. You know that, damn, I might be being turned. Because you know that, like, if the drink had weight, it wouldn't be bottomless, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't walk into a restaurant and be like, I want bottomless gin and tonics. Mm. Like, just keep bringing them to me. Which, I mean, well, you can
you
do
would
that.
Die.
They'll feel charge you
no, no,
for
no, but
each
that would
one.
Feel incredible. Yeah. Can you imagine doing that?
It would feel,
would
like,
love that.
Incredible.
Have you ever been to a restaurant where, like, you or someone you were with, like, knew the people sort of who ran it, and they just kept bringing you stuff? That's, like, you feel like a mob boss.
Yeah.
It's like one of the best feelings in the world.
used to, because you know that people are looking at you being like, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's this?
We used to have that with the Perkins around here where we were all staff because we went to high school with them.
Wow.
And we would eat like brunch food at 1 a.m. or whatever, and they would just keep bringing us nonstop stuff.
I love that.
You know, nonstop G&T's at the Perkins, baby.
At the Perkins, all that. At the Perkins. The Perkins.
I fucking love
that.
That
to me is the title of an episode. And with that, I don't know that we've solved the crisis, but you know, we'll figure it out.
We have some.
Should
time.
We do staff picks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here we are in staff picks, where we put aside brunch and dinner, and put aside the things of a child and pick up the games of a gamer.
Yeah.
And
who's crucially not a child.
Who's crucially not, these are grown up games. Games aren't just for kids anymore. Bang zoom. Nikki, you're playing.
I mean, crucially, Merritt.
Yeah.
The games on your list, I think, are literally for children, or were originally designed for children.
What do you mean?
I think that, like, literally the joke, when people say, hey, it's not just, this ain't your dad's whatever anymore, you've brought one of the three games that people say is that
joke. Like Pac-Man, Asteroids, Space Invaders. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I played the Space Invaders Invincible Collection. This came out last year in a physical form, and I was kind of hyped about it because it had, like, all this cool shit with it. It came out from Strictly Limited. The full version didn't, like, you could only get it in that way, and it was also like an obscene amount of money. And it's finally on the eShop today, as of this recording, I think.
For how much?
Yeah, they're asking for $60 American for this one. Okay. And
that's a lot of those. Yeah.
And it is Space Invaders.
And it's Space Invaders. Okay. And listen, folks, Space Invaders, fun game.
It's a classic. Well, some of the
it's a classic, and some of the later ones are pretty cool. They start like getting into weird shoot 'em up territory. Like, Majestic 12 is really cool, and it actually like has an ending. Space Invaders Extreme, which came out in 2008, is extremely good, as the name would imply.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was
like,
a DS game.
Yeah, it was on it was on the PSP. Yeah. It got really good reviews in 2008, a Space Invaders game. So like, it's good. It's $60, and you can get Space Invaders Extreme for $20 on Steam right now, or you can get a smaller version of this package that's been out since last year that has Extreme, a four-player simultaneous Space Invaders game, and Arkanoid versus Space Invaders, which is like Space Invaders except you're defeating the aliens with like an Arkanoid paddle and like a bouncing ball.
Nice.
Arkanoid is Breakout for people who don't know what Arkanoid
from
is.
The BlackBerry.
Yeah. So you could get that for $30. So basically, they're asking you to pay $30 for like five games that are from the 70s and 80s. Games that you can play. You can play Space Invaders in Google Calendar.
Mm-hmm.
You can, and it's like, I know we're supposed to like be like not encourage emulation or whatever, but like, fuck it. It's Space Invaders. Like the people who made these games are not, you're not taking money out of their children's mouths by pirating them today. And like, you can just search, like there's so many sites, like Internet Archive has like all of those arcade games preserved that are semi-legal, I think, at least. So it's like really insulting, especially because there's like nothing else. It's just like the Super Mario 64 collection or the 3D All-Stars one from last year, where it's like you boot it up. There's the games. There's a little bit of text explaining what they are. That's it.
No manuals, no back of the box high-res scans.
No high-res scans. No images of like the cabinets, which would have been really cool. It's missing a bunch of really important stuff, like Space Invaders Infinity Gene, which was for iOS, was like really good. And you can't play it anymore because it was 32-bit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not on there. Extreme 2 isn't on there. The Virtual Boy one, I can kind of understand that, but it still would have been cool.
Yeah. Especially for $60, it should be comprehensive.
For $60, it should be exhaustive. Yeah, it should have, like, every game that has been made that's reasonable to include.
You should be able to customize it so it's like Sonic's glove is the paddle or something. You know, like all, just all in.
Everything, yeah, or like, everything you even can like imagine, they don't didn't you know? Even do like the bare minimum of like, oh, you can customize the borders. And right. It's just like, I can't in good conscience tell people like, yeah, no, it's all right. Yeah, you could spend $60 on it. Like, I can't. I just have to be like, no, like, don't let them keep doing this. It's a horrible trend. Like, and there are companies who do this stuff well. Like Sega released a Genesis collection for the Switch a few years ago.
Yeah.
Routinely goes on sale. I think on Steam, you can get it a la carte. Like, you can just buy the individual games for like $1 each, or you can wait till they go on sale for like 20 for like 100. And and that collection on the Switch has this really cool package where it's like you're in like a bedroom and you can like adjust like the time of day so you can like hear crickets outside.
Oh. And then that's so
you,
cool.
You pick the games actually like off, you know, off a shelf, like the boxes, and then it shows the cartridge going in. It has like rewind, save states. You can play it in VR. It's like
Paul in the chat says you can play it in VR. Yeah, so you're just in that room.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh my God. That's so it's like, cool.
It's just like, that's how you do it.
And like, it's not even that like that treatment is new either.
No.
Because I played Namco Museum 1 on the PlayStation 1. Right. I thought all of the, I was four, three. Three or four. So I thought all of those games were new because of the way that they were wrapped.
Yeah.
So like all of the games were literally put into museum exhibits.
Yeah.
You walked around as Pac-Man into these different exhibits, and it like had different music, and you could walk up to a cabinet that would be like, this is Rally X. And it would explain to you what Rally X was. It would show you the credits of the folks who worked on Rally X. The room would look like a Rally X themed room. And then you would be able to play Rally X. And this was in 1999 or whatever the fuck.
Yeah. I mean, even back then, Sega was doing, there were a bunch of collections for like the GameCube and PS2 and stuff. Like I think the Sonic Genesis collection. And those were all really well done too. So it's like, you can really tell when, you know, because I don't think Taito, I don't know if they like developed this or if they just like licensed it out. I think it was Innin. I don't really know who that is. Innin Games. Okay, yeah, they like publish. They do like retro stuff. So they did Cotton, and
Cotton.
But it's just like you can.
Is somebody from Rhode Island here? Is that a Rhode Islander?
I mean, wow. Danielle, the answer is literally yes.
Yeah, I know. So, yeah.
But yeah, so it's just like, I feel like you can tell when like there's being care put into this stuff and when it's like a cash in. And
yeah,
if this were like even like 40, I would say sure. Like that's still a lot. Mm. But like Space Invaders Extreme is like $20 on its own. Throw in like 9 more things for another 20. Sure. But full retail is like, I don't know who's going to buy this.
It's also like, I think the thing that like I always think about is like, do they not think that people are going to tell other people who would probably be in the market for the game that they shouldn't spend the money on it? Mm-hmm. And they should wait. Like, are they just under the impression that the game is going to be $60 forever, like it's a Nintendo game, or do they not know that the $10 bin exists at Target?
Yeah,
like, do they not know where the games go?
I don't know. I mean, but, I have to imagine that the only people buying it are like, you know, Gen X people or Boomers who are like, oh yeah, Space Invaders, and like, who, but then even them, I feel like, you know, they would say, look at that and say, Space Invaders cost $60. It used to cost 25 cents.
Right.
So like, and kids,
you can only play Space Invaders so many times.
You can only play Space Invaders so many times. I don't think kids will enjoy this. So basically my takeaway is just play Space Invaders Extreme and watch a video of someone playing Infinity Gene because it was really cool and you can't play it anymore.
Or just like walk around on the street. Like, if you find a USB stick, Space Invaders or just is probably watch, on it.
Or just watch Pixels, you know?
Would you, just okay, would you rather pay $60 American to watch Pixels, or pay, you have to spend the $60? Okay. you have to spend $60 to watch Pixels in whatever state of inebriation you want, or you have to play through this, and you have to play 20 hours of this game stone cold sober.
Oh, Pixels, easily.
Easy?
Easily.
I also think it's Pixels.
Easily, easily.
Remember when that guy gets a blowjob from Q-Bert?
Remember when they have Q-Bert babies?
Oh, wow.
I do remember that, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that's enough about that. Let's talk
I'm
about...
I'm so glad I don't watch media.
Listen, neither do I. I just hear about these things. They're just in the ether. So from one of the oldest games to one of the newest, Nikki, you're playing Splitgate, which I get is still in beta, right?
It is still in beta. It has been in beta since we were in the office.
Like 2019,
pushed it back, right?
So it was supposed to come out, I would assume, sometime around the beginning of the pandemic. And then that happened, so I think they pushed it. And then a couple of months ago, it hit consoles. And that is when it kind of exploded, because it was a new first-person shooter. It looks like Halo. It is Halo, but with portals.
Okay.
From Portal. So each character has a portal gun, which shoots two portals, and you can put them on specific parts of the map geometry, and then you can move through them, you can shoot through them, you can throw stuff through them. And it follows the same momentum rules as Portal does, so if you like all of that. So they kind of rode the wave of Halo Infinite also getting pushed, right? And have now carved out this sweet spot between June, July, and presumably when Halo Infinite goes free to play, at which point I don't know what the fuck is going to happen to this game. but in the meantime, it is out, and I actually think it is a pretty competent first-person shooter that like has an interesting idea. I'm not going to go so far as to say that it's like doing a lot, because it legitimately is. It's just Halo, and they put portals in it. But I think that is a solid enough idea to get some legitimate run out of it. The guns feel... We were talking about this earlier on the morning stream, which you can... the Tuesday morning stream, which you can watch at twitch.tv/fanbite. But I think the guns... It feels like someone looked at Halo 2 and looked at the way the guns felt in Halo 2, and they were like, we got to get as close to this as possible. And they got mostly there, but they like don't have... It's not all the way there. And it's like the stuff that is not all the way there. You know when you describe a gun as feeling good to shoot in a video game, and it is less about like the swing and like the tactility, but it is more... Well, it's about the tactility, but in animation and in sound and in the way that the body of the shooter and the person being shot interact, and like all of that stuff playing together is what makes it work. I think there's a lot of stuff in that realm that is missing, which kind of makes it feel a little toyish, if that makes any sense, in a way that I wouldn't describe Halo. But I do think it has a really good... The pacing is really good. There is nothing better than putting a portal above a person and then turning around and putting one behind you and looking through that portal and shooting a guy in the top of the fucking head. Like, that's always satisfying. There are a lot of weird intricacies with the portal. So there are grenades, but they don't do any damage. The only thing the grenades do is blow up your opponent's portals. So you can... You can't... But obviously you only can see one side of the portal at a time. So you can go in, but you don't know it's blind. You're blind to it. You can't see through enemy portals, and you also can't see through friendly portals.
Only yours?
So you can only see through your own
portals. Oh, interesting.
So if you go into a portal that isn't yours, you're basically guessing every single time about what's on the other side, which opens up a lot of interesting doors, too, because you can have a portal pointed off of the side of the map if you would like. And a person could run into that portal and then jump off of the map. You could also basically trap people in rooms by like setting up a portal such that when they go in, because you get a note of like you get, there's an audio cue when a person goes into your portal, so you can let them go into your portal and then close your portals and trap them in a room, and then you know exactly where they are, so you can probably make your way over to that side of the map and cut them off if you understand the map layout. So there's a lot of like strategy that the portals add. And yeah, also the visual styling of this game is buck fucking wild.
Nice.
It doesn't make any sense. So it's very clear that they were like, oh, we're going to do a Halo at the beginning. And that makes sense. Your guy looks like a bootleg Spartan. Yesterday, I described it to my friend as if you went to the 99-cent store and you were in the toy aisle and you saw some toys for a property called Ring. And they were like, this is King Guy. And it was like, that's what the player characters look like. But let me see if I can try to find Splitgate.
I'm looking at screenshots right now and I've seen some of that. I was like, okay, there's a sort of Master Chief. There's another Master Chief. And then,
Groot's here. Like Groot's here. One of them's a cat.
One of them's a cat in khakis with fucking cyber monocle.
Some of them look like Power Rangers, like villains. It's bizarre, and it like I just don't understand what the visual identity or language for this game is, because it doesn't align. I've attached an image of one of the skins.
No, this is a fish man,
and it's unexplained why.
So did they just sort of be like, we already got like the game's mechanics exactly. figured out. We don't need a unified aesthetic. Let's just put whatever we want in and just mash up all our action figures.
At some point, they were like, we gotta open that Fortnite door a little bit.
Or is it, this may mean nothing to you, Nikki, but maybe to you, Danielle or Merritt, like, is this the Quake 3 aesthetic coming back home to roost?
Oh.
When it was just like, here's a man who's an eyeball with arms versus a cyborg versus the Doom Marine.
I miss those days.
That's kind of what that was.
Yeah.
But do they at least look like they were designed by the same
people? No, this is... Okay, now I'm immediately paying any amount of money. How much are they asking for Oliver?
How much Oliver?
Because Oliver looks like a character from the Fantastic Mr. Fox, like, got fucked up and, like, now is, like, sort of the gruff advisor to, like, a ragtag team of animals who are fighting back against the machines. That's sort of what is
Oliver's accent? Can somebody give me Oliver's accent?
That's the thing. Oh, yeah, please.
Somebody.
I've been fighting these machines too long.
That's really good. He's been fighting tin heads, which are just, again, if you walked into the dollar store and saw something that was almost Terminator, but not Terminator.
They took my eye.
Those are just the dudes.
But they can never take.
I'm sorry? Danielle, the what?
The dude.
Oh, the dude from Doom?
From Doom!
That does just look like a Doom flying man.
Yeah, the flying man from Doom, but he has the trumpet, so he's Doom.
Okay, this is, Oliver. I'm Oliver Ken.
Oliver's pretty good.
Oliver's so good.
I'm Oliver Ken.
But, yeah, I think the map design is like one of the most interesting things about this, because if the issue that I had when I played it 148 years ago is that it felt like they made Halo maps and then forgot that they needed to put portals places, so then they just like haphazardly threw some portal walls down. But now there are a bunch of maps and they have truly ridiculous amounts of verticality, and also like the angles are just completely fucked. So it's both fun because you can set yourself up for very silly stuff, but also like you can just get shot in the top of the head from nowhere. But I don't know. I think we're gonna play it again, some of it later today. That's Splitgate. Cool.
It seems like one of those ideas that like how is no one, Portal came out like 30 years ago. How has no one done this?
Exactly. How has no one done Shooter but with Portal in it?
Yeah. I wonder if it's like a tech thing. Like, I wonder if it's just really hard to process all that. And honestly, that was my first thought when you said that you can only see through your portals, is I bet that saves on.
That's probably.
You know why? Remember, you know, in Halo, I get other games do this, but I remember it more most specifically in Halo 5, when, and I think I'm the only one that played a lot of Halo 5, so I'm realizing
this on the planet.
Yeah, particularly, this is going to be particularly helpful as a point of reference. In Xbox One and PlayStation 4 games, they used to do this thing where if an enemy or an object was further away from you, they would move at a different frame rate than all of the other stuff around.
Right.
Yeah.
MMOs this do game that too. Does that.
I mean, yeah, I know, like
all the time.
A lot of 3D games do that.
Yeah.
This game does it constantly. And I've never seen it happen in a multiplayer game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like an arena shooter,
like a Twitch shooter. This. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not, it hasn't like, I don't know how to explain it. It has not affected it, but it is very obvious and visible when it happens.
Ah.
So like, it's like you, if you turn around a corner too fast, it's like the game didn't expect you to have to load that part or expect there to be a guy there. So it's like, ah, fuck, ah, fuck, ah, fuck. All right, here's the guy. But yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I find it very funny that on the "Is this game relevant to you?" similar to games you've played list on Steam, the game's references are Destiny 2, sure, yeah, okay, and Dota 2.
Huh.
And it's like, I don't know.
Well, it's got a cat in it.
It's because of Oliver, right? They had
That's
to.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
Cats, portals, there's an ancient that you defend in this one, right, Nikki?
Yeah, there's a battle pass.
Okay, okay.
Gotta have a battle pass.
How much is the
battle
pass?
I don't know. I refuse to spend money on this game.
All right.
Well, yeah. I'm looking forward to trying it. And it kind of, the premise sort of reminds me of, what was that game that came out a couple of years ago? The reverse time shooter thing?
Oh, Quantum League.
Quantum League. God, that game was weird.
This, I think this game does. I also attach those two games in my brain, and I know that they are not at all the same. But I think, like, in execution, I think because first-person shooter but put Portal in it is easier to understand, I think it plays better.
Trying to explain Quantum League or even play it, like, it was actually really fun when you figured out what was happening, but it was so fucking confusing.
Yeah,
it took you needed a galaxy brain to play it.
Yeah.
Truly a galaxy brain first-person shooter. So, Steven, it says here that you are playing Warframe and random shit because nothing else is clicking.
Yeah, I don't know. It's basically what it says on the tin. I just don't, like, I've been trying, I've played probably at least 15 games since last episode for at least 5 minutes, anywhere between 5 minutes and 2 hours. And most of it has just been Warframe still. Most of my total time played has just been Warframe because that's a very good game. But, like, yeah, I don't know. I'm just in one of those weird slumps that I sometimes get into where I can't find a game that really speaks to me. And there's cool stuff coming out and stuff I want to spend more time with. But I think I'm in a weird spot with a lot of games, including Warframe to a certain degree, where it's like I'm waiting for patches and I'm waiting for stuff to get out of early access and I'm waiting for expansions and all this stuff. Warframe's got that new war expansion coming pretty soon.
Yeah.
So that's exciting. War 2, the second war. And I'm really excited to play that. I want to play more High Fleet. I put a tiny bit more time into that game since we talked about it last week. And I found out that I had not beaten the tutorial yet when I talked about it last week in the 3 hours that I played. And I got out of the tutorial and I've been playing more of that, but like, I just hear about how like, oh, they're patching it a lot and adding more quality of life stuff, and whatnot. But yeah, no, I don't know, Merit, if anybody's got any good suggestions for something I should try, I'll take them. But,
Steven, I feel like I know the answer to this, but what's your experience with racing games?
Mm-hmm. I really liked Wipeout when they used to still make Wipeout games.
Oh.
Something about my brain. I love Burnout Paradise. Mm-hmm. Burnout Paradise is one of my probably top 10 favorite games of all time.
It's good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not huge into anything that goes toward. Here's the thing about racing games. Every racing game now, everybody who still has enough money to make a racing game also has enough money to afford a Ferrari license. And because that, they don't want their cars to look dinged up or bad anymore.
Mm, yeah.
That makes sense. And they're not going to not use that license. And so all the games where I used to be able to shoot missiles and explode and go into slow motion and stuff, it's kind of stopped. They kind of made stopped making those.
In Destruction All-Stars. No. I think that you might, and I have nothing to back this up other than I played 30 minutes of it. I think you might like Art of Rally.
Art of Rally, okay.
Just came out and is like an isometric rally game.
That's on Game Pass, right?
It is on Game Pass, yeah. I think it's gorgeous. I think it is also not a game that you will have to do any math to play if you're searching for something for no math.
Okay.
But yeah, give that one a try. Give that one a try. Let me know what happens. We'll come back in 2 weeks. We'll see if it makes sense.
Okay, I'll do that. I've been playing a lot of stuff off of Game Pass. I'll say that. So I'm easy to get to try something on Game Pass.
Y'all heard of? Let me see. Hold on. Let me just turn it. This looks like it's called Hades. Hades. Y'all heard of this?
Hades. Hades?
I can't believe how good of a deal Game Pass is, and I don't even have it.
Yeah.
So like I'm not like I don't have it. Microsoft isn't paying me, so I shouldn't even say anything. Mm-hmm. But like it's just unreal. Like I know obviously like Hades is like a year out at this point, but like I just like it's the stuff on there is like extremely good. It just doesn't make sense. Like, and it's like we're living in a world where Game Pass exists, and sorry to bring it back to this, but you want $60 for Space Invaders in a world where Game Pass exists? Like, are you fucking kidding me?
I mean, a lot of the stuff that I have been playing on Game Pass is also in this like category where it's like, oh, this is not worth $60 to me personally, but I'm glad I checked it out, and I probably wouldn't have checked it out if not.
Would you describe them, Steven, as arcade-style games?
Yeah, like there's stuff that I would have bought in, like, during the Summer of Arcade, when you could buy all four games, and you would get a $5 discount for buying all four of them in one package. I would have played those. I would have played, let's say, The Ascent, a game I played on Game Pass last week, which is like a sort of cool action top-down RPG shooter that kind of makes me think of like Crusader No Remorse or some of those like old PC games like Syndicate, the original Syndicate.
Oh, yeah.
Humankind, for instance, which is a new...
That's on Game Pass?
Yeah, that's on Game Pass. It's out today on Game Pass.
So they must get like a really good deal for that, right?
My understanding is that Microsoft, the things that I've heard is that Microsoft is basically writing blank checks right now because they just care about acquisitions and they will give you a lot of money.
I feel like what for the Xbox team is a lot of money is like falling out of the bank account of the Office team. If they're like, we can't put any, they won't let us put more money in this bank account. Mm-hmm. So it has to go somewhere.
Yep.
It
has to go somewhere.
That is, I mean, like, that is also a thing, too, is just like everybody's in acquisition mode right now.
That's good, right? For the economy.
No, things are weird with the economy right now, and that's like trickled into games in a lot of weird ways. Where like game studios are, there's never been a better time to sell your game studio right now. And Microsoft has a fucking ton of money, and inflation is about to hit real bad in the U.S. So a lot of these companies know, oh, now is a great time to sell, and also our money's worth more now than it's going to be worth in 2 years. So we should spend a lot of money. So that has created this perfect storm of a lot of people like being up for grabs for a company that has a like huge war chest like Microsoft, which is just interested in building up its Game Pass library so that, you know, 5 years from now, Game Pass has every game that has ever existed.
Well,
it has
Starfield, and 5 years from now, the price goes up by like $20 or something, right?
Probably.
For sure. Here's the thing.
Or the tiers will.
I mean, no, it'll still be a good deal, but like they've almost certainly, like the long game almost certainly has to be to like bring people in and then to increase the price, right?
Yeah, to Netflix.
That's always what it is, yeah.
Remember when Netflix was $10 a month?
I do.
Wow.
Back in the day.
Wow.
Then we'll get to the point where you'll have student Game Pass and you'll have to prove your credentials to get the student version of Game Pass. Yeah.
I'm worried about that future. It's not going to, I don't think it's anything we have to like, that it's going to hurt anybody right now, but I've talked about this on 99 Potions before, but I am definitely worried about like Microsoft becoming Disney, where they just own everything.
Well, Nintendo will never sell, so there's that.
Yeah, exactly. You can always rely on Mario. Also, just enroll in grad school, Steven. They'll give you an EDU email address. Everything's true.
You're right. And then I get that free internet.
Then you and the internet's free. Internet. It's free internet.
Well,
you can download and upload as much shit as you want on their network. They don't care. There's no way to check, famously.
Bandwidth. There's no way to measure that. It's all just bits and bytes, which are not a unit of measurement. Danielle.
Yeah.
What's Last Stop?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. Because I'm playing it and it's pretty cool. It's by the Virginia team. Remember Virginia?
Yeah.
That game from like 5 years ago or so. So I didn't actually play Virginia, but I have very fond memories of it because there was a cute little like audio tape. Does anybody remember audio tapes? I know this is from a long time ago. But like cassette
tapes.
Yeah,
that's where, that's like the thing that I had Radio Disney Jams Volume 2.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Or let's say the Suburban Commando original soundtrack.
Jesus.
Or like I recorded like off of the Walkman, I recorded the audio to one of my favorite episodes of Muppet Babies onto it.
Oh my God, that's adorable. That's really cute.
I had an audiobook version of Return of the Jedi on a VHS tape.
Oh.
And the drawing, the art on it had Luke holding his lightsaber, but like because they drew like lines around it, like spiky lines, I thought it was like a chainsaw.
An energy chainsaw. Yeah. That was the beginning of your Warhammer 40K love affair.
Must have been.
Oh
yeah.
My God.
But
Chainsaw Luke is like
Chainsaw
smaller Luke. Or whatever bigger that fucking shit was.
Chainsaw
yeah. Bigger Luke,
chainsaw
right?
Luke. Yeah, I propose the existence of a third Chainsaw Luke. Danielle. Okay, so yeah.
Wow.
What is The Last Stop?
Yes. It is a I'm really enjoying it thus far. It is a story-based game, which, kind of like Virginia, only it's a different type of story. It's sort of a three stories in one, maybe four stories in one, that are all happening around, I think it's London, but it's somewhere in the UK. It's some sort of cityscape. It's definitely London because it's the underground. It's the tube. Yeah, it's London. And there are supernatural happenings sort of happening in all of them. So there are... I've played maybe 2 hours or so of it, so I'm not really sure how far in I am. I think there's multiple chapters of each, but there's a sort of frame story that happens in the early 80s where it's a couple of troublemakers are running from some cops, and they go through a mysterious door and something mysterious happens. And there's another, yes, there's that's absolutely beautiful. I do love Chainsaw
God,
Luke.
Whips.
There are other stories that involve, you know, various characters kind of going about their lives and then something supernatural happens. It's a little bit X-Files. It's a little bit kind of whimsical. The gameplay is very, like, Life is Strange light. It's a lot of kind of walking around, interacting with things. There are a couple of QTEs, but they're very, very light. It's just, like, quick little things that are just to kind of make sure you're still paying attention, I think. You're making a lot of choices, like, a lot of dialogue choices and a lot of, you know, sort of decisions about what to do, et cetera, et cetera. But it really is that sort of, okay, this is, like, a cinematic little experience. It is a little bit rough around the edges, for sure. It is, like, the character models are pretty simple. The art is fairly simple. It's all, like... a little bit low poly, but I like that sort of thing. And the writing is quite good thus far. I'm actually like very invested in all of the characters and all the little stories. So I'm really enjoying it. It's something we got a code for and I haven't had time to play it. And then this week I was like, oh shit, I should really play this. This looked really cool. It's one of like Annapurna's, you know, games of the summer, mm-hmm. basically this summer. And I am really enjoying it. I'm playing it on Switch. I think it's on all the usual suspects, all the consoles.
Yeah,
probably on Steam, but I don't actually know that. So, yeah,
it might even like let's just say for sake of argument, be on Game Pass and something that you could download and play about mm-hmm. 5 minutes of in the last week.
Yeah. Oh my God!
Wow,
see that? You see that? It's all coming around. It's all coming around. But yeah, I really am liking it so far. I haven't played like a super story based game in a while. I've been like, oh, all about Cozy Grove and Into the Breach and my usual stuff, and then of course the little puzzle game I played last week that was really fun. I Am Dead. Which, you know, feels, again, that title is so much darker than the game contained within. It's like a fairly, like, you know, it's a little whimsical. I'm really enjoying it. It's been a bit since I played something like this, and once in a while, this is really quite nice. It's quite quite breezy.
Cool. Yeah, yeah, that sounds really cool.
Beautiful.
Should we do question time?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, we have something different today, which is a phoned-in question. And if you would like
to... Yeah, it's just real, just real bottom of the
barrel. Yeah, they did not even try.
Oh, no!
But seriously, if you would like to call and leave a message to our voicemail, you can do that. If you have a phone or a computer that can make phone calls. Now, what is that number, you ask? And... I would love to tell you what the number is.
Yeah. It's 424 Gamer Z.
Gamer Z.
So 424
Z, yeah, Gamer Z Z. Surely.
Yeah. Okay. Gamer Z.
Gamer Z Z.
424 G A M E R Z.
So you can remember that by thinking of like a Gamer Z Z Top.
Yes.
Exactly like a Z-Z Gamer Z Z Top.
Like Z Z Top.
Yes.
Z Z Top a gamer?
We'll have to look
at that. Not a single man.
Really?
Yeah, no, it's like five guys. It's like five guys who all look the same.
I thought ZZ Top was
they're all sharp, dressed, and there's like five of them. But if you want to call in with questions ZZ Top related or otherwise, you can do it at that number. And here is our call for today.
Hi, my name's Pat. I was listening to this week's episode, and Steven's description of the Chili Bead Blast, which made me remember for like a fourth grade project I made, we had to make board games, and mine was a combination of chess and Monopoly, basically trying to make the like least pleasant game ever. You had to, for each go around the board of Monopoly, you would unlock one of your chess pieces, and then you had to win the game of Monopoly to start playing the game of chess, and like, you didn't have all your pieces because you lost the Monopoly game. You were just, like, sucked, I guess. I don't know. I never actually played it. But I was wondering what the most tedious game y'all have ever played would be. Thanks. Bye.
So,
God, we have to play
first of all,
this,
we
right?
have to play this.
Yep. Well, Rhode Island Activity.
So, yeah, okay. What's the most tedious game you've ever played? And I do want to just ask a separate question. First, which is, did you ever have a unit in school where you had to like design a board game? And was
it was
always something like this, right? It was always something terrible because you're starting with components that aren't very good to begin with.
Yeah.
It was always like you roll and move and fall into a hole and die.
I remember making my own dice out of like construction paper that were weighted down on one side so they would always roll a certain way with like a penny.
Wow. And
I made a religious board game once.
Really?
Yeah, it was a Catholic board game that I called Enlightenment, and it was a bunch of trivia. And
you had to, of course, trivia is the other big one.
Yeah.
You roll and you answer trivia. Those are like the two components of like children's board games in the 90s.
Yeah.
In my first year theater tech like workshop class, I with the rest of the class made a board game called hashtag Canada the Game. Which was like the board was shaped like a maple leaf and it was basically Monopoly, but it was like it actually wasn't Monopoly. I don't know why I said it was Monopoly. There were multiple sets of cards, so like we had four variants of cards tied to the four colors that the spaces could be. And then each card was an activity. So it was like there was a physical challenge one, and then there was a trivia one, and then there was a charades-esque one, and then I don't remember the fourth one.
You made Cranium.
I was going to say you made Charlie McDennis, but Cranium is good too.
Sure, yeah.
You don't know Charlie McDennis?
Yeah.
No, what?
Okay. There's an episode of It's Always Sunny. There's two episodes, actually, where they play a board game that they have invented called Charlie McDennis. There's like three levels. There's like physical challenges, mental challenges, and like spiritual challenges or like emotional challenges. And then in the second episode where they do it, Frank adds a fourth level, which is horror, where he does a saw on them.
It's pretty good.
They're very good episodes. You may be able to watch them if you've never seen the show. But it's very funny.
Yeah, I need to catch up on
that. So yeah, I feel like I made some, I feel like, you know, I don't know, in like French class or something, it was always like, make a board game. Tu dois faire un jeu de board. And I was like, ouais. And that's, we did
Is that
it.
How French board games work?
That's how they work in France. It really sucks.
Yeah, no, I said, yeah, yeah. I feel like, yeah, it was like a big thing. Anyway, most tedious game. Huh. Most tedious game. And that's, in a way, that's just like asking what's the worst game. But like, it's more specific, I guess. Most tedious game.
Yeah. I guess we can't just say Monopoly, because that's already been covered. I
mean, Monopoly is extremely tedious. It doesn't have to be a board game. Easy. It doesn't have to be a board game. But I feel like I'm most tedious games, you play for like a few minutes, and then you're like, fuck this, I'm done with it.
Yeah.
Unless somebody's making you play it, right?
Yes, for a job.
Unless you're playing it under duress.
Unless you have to review it. I think that Dragon Ball Kakarot game was up there for me.
Yeah.
And that, yeah, I don't know. Some people liked it. I just, it was so boring. And I had to push myself to play it, to write about it. And it was just like, the only enjoyment I got out of it was the part where Vegeta fishes on Namek.
Oh, right.
Pulls out, yeah, whips out a fishing rod and just starts fishing.
Cool. Would you, out of the kind of two like all-timer merit reviews that I can think of where like you were down on a game, are that and Godfall?
I mean, I wouldn't even call that okay, no, actually, yeah. I had blocked out Godfall.
Godfall, I
didn't even play enough of to write a review. It was just like a trending piece that was like, this is one of the worst games I've ever played. And like, it just makes, it's not even like bad in like, it was just so nothing. And it was so tedious, and it had the potential to be cool, and it just really wasn't. Yeah. And I saw the other day that there's an update for it out now, and I just like, guys, just cut your losses. Just make God rise or something. You know, if God falls so great, why is there no God rise?
Right?
What, anyone else have a most tedious game?
Massive Chalice.
Really?
Yeah.
What is that?
Wow.
It was, it's a tactical turn-based
Double Fine
game.
From Double Fine. Muir. And I bought it because the art looked cool on the store.
Oh.
Yeah.
Knew nothing about it. Got in there, it's fucking RTS.
No.
But because I had spent the money on it.
Oh, no.
And I was like a teenager, I had to play it. So I think I put like 15 hours into it. And
wait.
It was one of the most boring experiences I've ever had.
It's a turn-based tactics game, if I'm not mistaken. Not an RTS, not a real time strategy.
No, yeah, not a real time strategy.
It's not even a real time strategy.
I need to ask. Nikki, do you think this is a bad game, or you just don't like this type of game?
Is there a difference? No, it's definitely the second one.
Yeah. Massive Chalice is pretty well liked.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, they're wrong.
I also always enjoy the creative director on this game, Brad Muir, who is no longer with Double Fine because he's been swallowed up by the void of Valve Software, used to always sit behind us at the International Dota 2 Championships, and with his brother, whenever the in-game horn sounded and it would go, brruh, brruh, him and his brother pulled out horns and went at the same time.
That's pretty good. Aww. Now I feel bad for not liking this game. Should I try it again?
I mean, the horn tech doesn't necessarily speak to the game.
It does, though. It speaks a lot about the energy of the guy who made
it. Give it a second chance.
Maybe. I'll give it a second chance.
My answer is a trolley answer.
Oh.
Mm.
You're going to hate
Epic
me.
Epic troll.
Gonna say Warframe?
You say Destiny?
Destiny?
Yeah.
Destiny is really tedious. I don't hate you. Like, I would be the first one to say that, like you have to understand, like, a lot of the time that I play Destiny is just to have something to do with my hands while I'm listening to a podcast.
That's
and
fair.
Like there, yeah. its tedious yeah. quality yeah. is exactly what I'm looking for. Or if I'm just like watching a movie and I know like, whatever, I should just be able to sit and watch a movie, but I have attention issues. Destiny is only engaging really when you're either doing new story stuff or when you're playing with other people.
Gotcha.
Otherwise, yeah, no, it's just fucking vibe. I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, there that has value. I don't want to say like, I think it sucks. It's more like I find it.
No. I totally understand. Also, you played Destiny 2 or Destiny at launch?
I played Destiny at launch and then I played Destiny 2 at launch. Yeah. Destiny, I seriously played it like several times and I forgot every single time. Like I legitimately forgot that I played it and then I would try it again and I'd be like, oh wait, I played
also,
this.
Also, both of those games were terrible at launch. Like,
yeah.
Fair
they
enough.
Have their, like Destiny 2 continues to have its issues, but like it is miles ahead of where it was when it came out.
Yeah, that's fair.
Especially
yeah.
because that's it was like, fair. Oh yeah, all your shit that you had in Destiny, like, nah.
The music on the farm was good,
though. The farm was good. Yeah. R.I.P. the farm got blown up.
R.I.P. the farm.
Or is it still there?
Fucked up.
No, I think it got eaten up.
It got ed up because there's no reason to go there because Cade's dead.
Oh, was Cade there? Is that where Cade was?
Yeah, Cade was, that's where he got his chicken.
Oh, that's cute. I didn't know that. I didn't know much about Cade. Let's do one more question. And we'll save the other one. Grace asks, today is National Lazy Day, and this was sent on the Fanbyte Discord, which you can get to by going to fanbyte.casa, go to podcast questions, let us know it's for Channel F. National Lazy Day, I believe, was a week or two ago. I'm getting this one late. Sue me.
Makes you think, though.
Does make you think. What's your favorite video game to play when you're feeling lazy as hell? And I could say Destiny or whatever, and Danielle says she's not how to relax. I'm sure Stephen has answers, but Nikki, I think you've got one for us.
Hit it, Paul.
Today I don't feel like doing anything. I just wanna sit in my spawn. Don't feel like putting down my scope, pitch a tent and call it home. Today I swear I'm not doing anything. Running the first house I see, put my back to the wall, gonna get comfortable, won't forget to go.
Did y'all watch it?
Yes.
I did.
That was
good.
I noped out after about a minute.
Did you? Interesting. So kind of what part of the campy song by Try Hard Ninja, a parody of the lazy song by Bruno Mars that takes place inside of Call of Duty Black Ops?
Wow.
Where did you check out?
Well,
kind of what about that string of words made you say, I'm actually okay?
There was a part where he was talking about exploding cookies or something, and I didn't know what that was. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't understand this. It's different. So therefore I hate it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But I heard it when he said, today I don't feel like doing anything. I'm just going to sit in my spawn.
I just wanna sit in my spawn.
I got my counter UAV. Yeah. No blackbirds will bother me. Today I don't feel like doing anything. What is Ninja and Ghost?
Ninja and Ghost are two perks that you get in the video game. Call of Duty Black Ops that make you not appear on UAV and makes your footsteps silent, which makes it good for hiding if you're gonna camp in those video games. I don't know. As soon as I read this question, my brain went here, which was one of the most seminal pieces of video game media that I think I consumed when I was a teenager.
How old is this song?
2010, wow. So 11 years old.
Oh my god.
But it sounds so fresh even today.
It does sound so fresh, so cool. That's the power of Bruno Mars, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I think that's really more on Bruno Mars than it is on
That is absolutely all.
Try Hard Ninja?
Try Hard Ninja. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. There's an entire era of video game parody songs that I think we all should kind of become more familiar with.
A lot of Minecraft ones, for sure.
But like the Fortnite one that everyone was falling in love with over the summer, like that one came out of this. Like this is like
This is the lineage it came from.
Right.
It's not the first. There have been many.
There's kind of
in the line.
There's kind of two tiers too, right?
Yes.
There's like a parody song by somebody who does it for like the love of the song and or the game.
A Weird Al, if you
will. And or the game.
Or a lazy ninja or tryhard ninja. Sure.
Tryhard ninja, please, please, please.
And then there's like
he's the opposite of lazy.
And then there's like Spotify rappers who like look up the trailer for every single upcoming game, pick out whatever words that they can think of, and then try to make a rap around it in the hopes that like the SEO for like when Anthem or Destiny or whatever the fuck Fallout 5 comes out, like somebody's mm-hmm. going to be like, I want to hear some music about that. And then they'll be at the top of the SEO mm-hmm. because they put out a rap that day that that song or that day that that trailer launched.
Yeah.
Those are bad.
It's kind of like what Weird Al did. I can't believe I'm going to talk about this on the second consecutive day on a second consecutive podcast. It's the opposite of what Weird Al did, which was he wanted to, when he was writing A Saga Begins, he kept asking George Lucas to let him see the movie early, and George Lucas kept saying no, and Lucasfilm kept saying no, so he wrote it without having seen the movie and then donated a bunch of money to some charity who was doing a screening and then realized that he had gotten a large chunk of it correct before he had even seen the film.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
Genius.
And then he did the song. But he asked George Lucas a lot of times to see the movie and he kept
imagine
saying
no to Weird Al Yankovic.
Right?
I know. It couldn't be me.
Weird Al Yankovic could be like, Merritt, I need your kidney or I'm gonna die. And I'd be like, of course, Weird Al. Of course. You're like 60 something. If it means we're gonna get, you know, more parodies of what's on the radio.
I think he's done.
You think he's done?
I think he's done.
That contract ended.
His last album was called Mandatory Fun because it was the last album he was contractually obligated to make for Sony.
He signed like a 17 record deal or something like that.
Yeah.
And just finally
now,
got out
I
of it.
I think mostly he just hangs out with celebs now. He's just like, he makes YouTube videos and like hangs out with celebs and his kids and family. And
he voice acted on a Disney Channel show.
Yeah, he's done a bunch of voice acting over the last decade. He was in Adventure Time a bunch.
Yeah.
I hope he like doesn't make more music. Also because like what the fuck is Weird Al? Can you imagine? Close your eyes. If you're driving, close your eyes. Imagine a Weird Al cover of What's Poppin' by Jack Harlow. And like what do you think that sounds like? Like what is that? You can't imagine it.
Well,
you've already
first
crashed
of all,
your car.
I can't
and you're
imagine
dead.
What.
Is it because that you is. Don't know what What's Poppin' by Jack Harlow sounds like? All right.
Do you remember when? Can you imagine the conversations that would be happening today if. Do you remember, the song Living in America by James Brown from Rocky 3 to 4?
Yeah.
Weird Al did a cover of that called Living with a Hernia. And he has a video for it where he is dressed like James Brown. He got his hair to do the same thing as James Brown. And he is like, you know, imitating his singing and stuff. And not to be one of those people who's like, oh, you couldn't do that today. But like, I would be really curious to see. I feel like Weird Al would not do that today.
No, I don't think so.
But
either.
There are a bunch
like,
of videos.
He wouldn't do fat today.
No, he wouldn't
either.
Weird Al had a lot of like weird, like, because he had the whole food album. And yeah, he would probably not do fat today. He might still do Eat It. Because
he might do Eat It.
I think he probably would
Eat It is
do
just
eat
about
it, yeah.
Why are you always such a fussy young man? Don't want no Frosted Flakes, don't want no Raisin Bran. Well, don't you know? He might not say, don't you know that other kids are starving in Japan?
Right.
He might not say that.
Yeah, I think his lyrics would have gotten another.
Yeah. But we wish him the best. And I think that's going to bring us to the end of this episode. So a hush settles over the podcast as we.
Happiness will never come
up
to those who fail to appreciate what they already have. Okay. That's what I have to say at the end of this episode.
Wow.
Yeah.
The printed manual for High Fleet is 92 pages long.
Well, you've got some homework.
What?
Read through this. It's like when a teacher's like, you have to read through the syllabus before the first class. You got to read through this 91-page manual.
Landing. While most of your fleet can land automatically on a city's outskirts, at least one ship needs to land manually at the city's docks so that you can personally visit Tarkhan. You may also want to land any ship that needs fast repairs.
This has been Channel F.
Time is also a valuable resource.
Thank you for listening to our show. If you liked it, please rate and review us on iTunes. And please tell your friends, too. Tell your friends about our great show that you love so much. It's called Channel F. You're listening to it right now.
Is this a game? I'm looking at screenshots.
Oh, you missed last week's episode.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's a game. Yeah.
Right, you're on the International Space Station, which isn't far from the height with which this game takes place. So.
Right, exactly.
This looks like that. This looks like that vector graphics game where you have to land a ship on the triangle.
Moonlander, you do that at the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, you. In order to do that, you need to ensure you apply upward thrust W.
Well, if you want to follow Nikki on Twitter, Nikki is at GodCY. If you want to follow Steven... Steven is at Steven Strom. Danielle is at Danielle R.I. I am at Merrick K. Fanbyte is at Fanbyte Media. Our producer, Paul, is at Pauly Mayo. Join the Fanbyte Discord, fanbyte.casa. Check it out. And until next week, don't forget to engage your thrusters when you're trying to land your airship to meet the Tarkhan. And keep that dial tuned to Channel F.
Hey everyone, it's John Warren from Fanbyte. The world of games and entertainment can be a lot to try to keep up with, but don't worry, I've got you covered. Join me, the Fanbyte crew, and our friends from around the industry as we break down the week's biggest headlines on Thanks for the Knowledge, our weekly video game news podcast. Plus, get a look at the week ahead so you don't miss upcoming game releases, events, and much more. Thanks for the Knowledge is available at fanbyte.com/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can thank us later.
Do not include that. I cannot state that strongly enough. You cannot put that in.
Why?
You can't because it's
merit known scatter.
I think if I scat, it counts as a hate crime. because I'm so bad at it. okay, let's start.